You're listening to Ride Along, EMT School. I'm Mike.
And I'm Max. We're two students navigating EMT school, bringing you along week by week.
And I'm Jonathan, paramedic, bringing real-world perspective.
Join us as we share the lessons, challenges, and stories from EMT school, and hear insights from those already living the EMS life. Welcome to the Ride Along.
Every time.
It's my favorite part.
I want to bop my head to it.
Yeah. Welcome, everybody, to episode 5 of the Ride Along EMT School podcast. I'm your host, Mike, here by my co-host,
Jonathan.
Jonathan, welcome, everybody. We are still missing our good friend Max in this episode. I'm sure you will miss him, too. He's sick. Well, to give you a little insight, sometimes we film multiple episodes on the same night, and it's the same night as the last episode. So Max was sick for that one. We're flying in the missing man formation again for episode 5, Malfunction Junction, which is going to be dealing with pathophysiology, which I can hardly say without messing the word up. So we're chugging along. We're in week, Max and I have gone through 5 classes, I believe, so far.
Okay.
And pathophysiology was week 5. And we're already, you know, he's already dropping out. He's already can't cope with the stress. And he's just, you know, developing, he's sick and he's stressing out. No, I'm kidding. He's fine. But it's a lot. It's been a lot. This week in particular, I think with pathophysiology, it's a lot of concepts to kind of grasp. Before we get too deep into the episode, we should mention our sponsor. So the Ride Along EMT School is brought to you by you. Do you have a business, product, or service you'd like to promote to your EMT and first responder community? We're opening the door for sponsors who want to support the show and reach a passionate, growing audience. If that's you, get in touch with us. We'd love to partner up. Shoot us an email at ridealongpodcasting@gmail.com for more info. So, join us. You know, you plenty of opportunity. Just reach out to us. We've got sponsorships available. So it's how we get to keep this thing going. If you like it, you know, spread the word. So pathophysiology. What is pathophysiology, Jonathan?
So pathophysiology is looking at all the different systems of the body and how they interact with one another to create a functioning person, right? And we're looking at all the different parts as a sum total and how they play off each other. I believe in the last episode I compared it to looking at an engine, right? All right. The engine being comprised of different individual parts. And then how does that engine actually run? That's the pathophysiology of it.
Yes.
So how does this body of ours function? And what are the different processes that are required for it to function?
So this week,
properly.
We're not talking about alternators. We're talking about the electrical system of the car and how it all functions together and how that alternator creates an electrical charge, which travels through wires, which goes to the battery, which charges the battery, which then functions the spark plugs, and the spark plugs ignite the fuel. That's all part of the combustion. It's like, you know, you see all these little parts, they all work together, right? They form a purpose. It's putting it all together in terms of medicine, right?
If you think about it, it is the human body is one big chemistry set that generates electricity and signals. That's what we've got going on.
So it's like that potato experiment where you just
it's the potato experiment.
Where you can make
a
clock run off of a potato.
It's kind of like that. Yeah.
It's just chemistry, electricity. You know, has nothing to do with the mysteries of life somehow forming into a consciousness in the body. We're just meat. We're meat robots that, have all types of functions in them. just take the whole mysticism out of it and, you know, really just break it. It's funny because that's essentially what medicine is, right?
Yeah.
We're going to take the spiritualism, the ethereal, the mystic out of the equation, like the soul, if you will. Although there is kind of holistic medicine, which does kind of take that into account. But the science of it is, no, remove all that. And we're going to talk about the actual like thing itself. How does it work? What are the cellular structure, the electrical impulses, how things move from one another, the chemical breakdown, the process itself. And it's like, that's how we've been able to kind of get to the point that we are in today's world where we can do some really amazing things in medicine.
Yeah. I mean, it is all of those things. It's mechanical, it's chemical, it's electrical. And that's, like I said, that's the big thing is the sum of all these parts create these different reactions and how do they balance out? And
yeah.
That's pathophysiology really.
Yeah. Just that tiny little concept, nothing that big. Yeah. It's not hard to grasp at all, you know? So, yeah, this week was intimidating because it's kind of like, it's obviously not a culmination because it's only like, we're still within this fifth class of this entire series of 40. Man, it started getting not over the head, but I need to buckle down and study.
It's foundational though, right? Yes. Like everything builds upon itself as you're going through EMT school. You've got to understand the anatomy so you can start to talk about the pathophysiology.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to understand the pathophysiology before you can even understand why doing your assessments are important. Yes.
Yeah.
And then, you have to understand what you're looking at and mm-hmm. and what those different assessment skills point towards as far as disease processes and injuries and
whatever. While on the EMT level, you're not necessarily making diagnosis and treating. Like there maybe in a broad sense, you are treating patients, but the higher up the chain that you go, right? Like the more that you're assessing, the more that you're diagnosing, you have more privileges and enables things that you can affect to change some of that pathophysiology to help the patient.
Well, I wouldn't sell yourself as an EMT student or at EMTs short. And I know that wasn't your intention.
No, definitely not.
For sure. But, we touched on it in the last episode a little bit about how things change, and that's going to be a constant conversation that we're having.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to understand that we've gone away from just making assessments in the field and doing assessments to actually providing some level of field diagnosis.
Yes.
Even at the EMT level, And it all depends on kind of where you are and the program you're in. But in general, that's what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure.
Is coming up with a field diagnosis and basing your interventions off of that and what you find via your assessments. So now at the EMT level, maybe you are a little limited on the higher acuity side of the house. But just being able to recognize those significantly sick patients from the door based on your understanding of anatomy and physiology.
Mm-hmm.
That's big.
Yeah. It's getting
right?
Getting some
recognize
of that.
Somebody sick.
Yeah. And it's getting like, I think with expanding the knowledge set and like you said, the assessment, the quote unquote diagnosis paradigm, if you will, out farther than just the doors of the hospital, you're getting better information sooner. Like it makes all of it starts to connect and make sense. Like the more you can get education and, you know, critical thinking out, into the field, I see it leading to better outcomes. So like the level of it's just to say that I understand the importance and the need to get this deep into the information in EMT school. But, so with that being said, we have a core, like we do the medical term of the week. And I think it's a very kind of core topic to what we're talking about tonight in terms of pathophysiology, because pathophysiology is, it exists in balance. Like all the things that the body does, mm-hmm. it does them in conjunction with everything else. So organ systems, usually are in checks and balances. One thing over, like, you know, being deficient leads to another thing picking up the slack. Mm-hmm. If it's underperforming or overperforming or whatever it is, the body wants to be in homeostasis. It wants to be at a level of what the term is of compensation, right?
Right.
Well, actually, compensation is the act of compensating, but it wants to be in balance. Compensate, like the body compensates to make sure that the rest or the body is in that balance. And that means that if something is hurt or isn't performing well enough, something else is probably going to start performing or overperforming to make up for it. So, the simplest analogy that I can think of. So, and this is what clicked for me because we were talking about a lot of stuff in the class, about especially like cardiovascular system, the interaction between the heart and the lungs. The body, like at its core, the body needs blood. It needs oxygenated blood for like the very core functions of every cell. And just to, you know, the every cell exists or needs ATP, which is produced in the mitochondria. I know this is getting deep, and
the
powerhouse of the cell. it needs glucose to provide that, but essentially, none of that can happen without oxygen. And the blood is responsible for bringing the oxygen throughout the body. The heart does two things. It puts the deoxygenated blood into the lungs. The lungs fill that blood with oxygen. It goes back to the heart. And then from the heart, it goes out to the rest of the body, goes through the arteries, comes back through the veins, and comes back to the heart. I know I'm probably oversimplifying, but...
That's a basic rundown of it. That's what's going on.
Yeah. The core function of the body is cardiovascular, right?
Sure.
So you need all of that to happen. And there may be times where the body needs more oxygen or less oxygen or, you know, like depending on the activity level or what's going on. Now, those two organs working together is very much a balance. So to meet the level of oxygen that you need in your body, the lungs have to be oxygenating the blood and the heart has to be pumping at the rate to make the body stable. Those two things at the same time. If the heart is underperforming, say the heart isn't pumping well enough, it's not pumping fast enough.
Right.
The lungs, the respiratory system will often compensate by starting to work harder, right? Like, you know, breathing heavier. It will be recognizable that like, hey, they're trying to put in more oxygen into the system while still maintaining a lower level of circulation. And the inverse is true as well. If the body is getting less oxygen or if the lungs are getting less oxygen from the outside world than they should be, the heart rate will raise so that same amount of oxygen will move around, right?
Yeah.
That is compensation. So one thing working harder to make up for the other to kind of keep things in stasis. Now, I'm sure this is why I keep Jonathan around. That there are plenty of other forms of compensation. Like I've been able to grasp just the kind of core concept of the cardiovascular one, but are there others?
Yeah. I mean, so, the cardiovascular and respiratory aspects of the body, staying in balance, trying to attain that homeostasis, right? Whether we have a low blood pressure, so we increase the rate at which we're pumping that oxygenated blood around, so again we can maintain that. Essentially the body has numerous mechanisms when something starts to go out of whack and not be in balance,
which is actually pretty cool. Like, you know, to see the evolutionary side of, like, you know, if things go wrong, what other things happen to try and save itself.
Right. That what you're talking about though with the cardiovascular system and the respiratory system, that is the foundational, like, epitome of the body maintaining homeostasis, right? We've got to pump that oxygenated blood across the body to maintain perfusion. And that's a term we're going to visit more during this episode is perfusion.
That would be a good term to put in there too, because perfusion is would you classify it as like the adequate amount of oxygen being delivered to an area?
Right. It is the oxygenated blood being delivered to the different cells in the different tissues of the body. And you need that oxygen, as you're talking about with ATP and the production of energy and then, you know, removal of waste product. You 100% need to be able to perfuse that tissue, right? Yeah. You need to be able to oxygenate it.
Right. Because perfusion isn't just oxygen. It's the process of the blood flowing in and out and adequately, there's no better word for perfusion than perfusion.
So air goes in and out, blood goes around and around, and any deviation of that is going to be negative. Negative for us. So perfusion is the name of the game when we talk about emergency medicine. We want to maintain the ability to perfuse all the vital tissues of the body.
Now what happens, because compensation is a concept of, okay, one thing's working harder. What happens if it can't keep up?
You start to, this plays into like our assessment side of the house. You start to see things that are not able to keep up. So one of the examples we gave was either breathing more rapidly to get more oxygen into the lungs to be able to maintain that same level of perfusion, in addition to maybe pumping that oxygen around the body more, or at a faster rate, faster heart rate. To pump that oxygen around the body more. What eventually happens is the body cannot maintain those states of being. It's like overclocking a computer. I don't know if people overclock computers anymore.
I remember back in the day, I did a water cooled Windows PC with a NVIDIA graphics card, right. And yeah, that thing was overclocked.
So, and we've already done some automobile
analogies,
but it's like, you start to redline that speedometer, for those different things. And eventually you're going to burn something up.
Yeah. It can't right? keep it, up that
it,
long.
It can't, the sum of the individual anatomy, cannot keep up with redlining that the body for that long. So, the question is, how long can somebody compensate? And the answer is going to be, it depends. It depends on what sort of pre-existing conditions they have and what sort of general health, state they were in before whatever happened, happened. So
for compensation, we're seeing signs, right? Some of them are measurable. Of them. Yeah. So the heart rate's increasing, respiratory, rates increasing. What is it? So, if those things start to fail, that's decompensation, right?
So one of the big things is like, all right, is our tissue being oxygenated well? And a very clear sign of that is going to be your skin tone or skin coloration, and you're going to have cyanosis or a bluing or purpling of
like blue lips
tissues,
yeah,
like blue lips. You may have your nail beds may start to turn
capillary colors. Response, right?
Yeah, cap refill is going to be increased in the amount of time that it takes to, return that tissue to a normal look. So those are some signs that the circulatory system is not perfusing very well. And those are just kind of like little assessment tools things that you can observe when it comes to decompensating. Ultimately, like late signs of decompensating are respiratory rate decreases to a significantly lower level than that's not able to support life, right? We've kind of maxed out our capacity to stay at that higher respiratory rate. Same thing with our heart rate. We start to become bradycardic, and then we will also become hypotensive. Our blood pressure lowers. There's a lot of different little signs that when combined together will start to show you somebody is decompensating. And then once we reach a certain point, and we're going to talk more about shock as this episode goes on.
Yeah.
But once we reach a certain point, your body's no longer able to compensate. We're in irreversible shock, right? There's very little opportunity to recover from what has gone on. And so how does this affect us as EMTs, and what can we do? Well, the biggest thing is recognizing those signs of that compensated state first, right? Yep. Oh man, that heart rate's really, really high and they're breathing really, really fast. Okay, what's going on? What could be the cause of this? And it's like we have to look at the totality of the circumstance, right? Oh, they were involved in a horseback riding accident, and you know, they lacerated something and they bled a whole bunch. Well, now they don't have as much blood volume in their body to carry oxygenated blood, because they're losing blood to the vital tissues, right? So until you stop that bleeding, and then you may see an increased heart rate, right? We're trying to pump blood even faster, and you may see an increased respiratory rate because we're trying to get more oxygen in the blood and to the vital tissues. So it's being able to recognize those things early on. I mean, one thing we call it, and as we get into assessment, we'll talk more about it, but a from the door assessment. What do I see and what do I hear as soon as I walk in? Those are some things that we may want to consider.
Yeah. So the idea of compensation being very tied to pathophysiology and like how all these things are working, that was my key takeaway from this week's class. And that is like everything works in conjunction, right? It's really why the name of the episode was Malfunction Junction. Like it's like the old, Saturday morning cartoon. What is that? It's Schoolhouse Rock, right?
Schoolhouse Rock, yeah.
Yeah. Conjunction Junction? What's your function?
That was a grammar one.
Yes, it was.
It was.
But everything's connected. You know, it's everything is working with each other. And then, you know, essentially that's the overall story of you know, how all this stuff works is like, you're going to have signs, things are going to be happening. Like as emergency services, we're going to be looking for these types of things, making recommendations, treating all this other stuff, communicating that, saying, hey, this is what we're seeing along the way, you know, giving all that information that allows the higher level providers to make, you know, decisions on healthcare and all this other stuff. But it all starts at how the things are playing together.
Right.
So.
And recognizing it.
Yeah. So compensation, very core to the story this week in terms of how all those things work together. So there was a lot of things in this class. Really, it comes down to a lot of the discussion was a breakdown in systems, like what each system does. So, I mean, just to name a few, because I don't remember them all. If somebody's like, hey, what is the endocrine system? I'm like, okay, the endocrine system is in charge of hormones. And what systems is part of which organs are part of the endocrine system? I would have to think about that some in terms of like, well, basically it's all controlled by the brain, but endocrine system is like kidneys, right? Or no,
no, that's gonna be your
no, that's renal the renal system. System.
Duh. Yeah,
see, this is why I'm a student. I still have to get better all this stuff. Let's start with an easy one. Cardiovascular system. That's the heart.
Involves the heart. Yeah.
That's the heart. Respiratory system. That's the lungs. You know, the digestive system, esophagus, stomach, intestines, colon, mm-hmm. you know, that line goes all the way through. That one's easy to follow. It just goes, you know, from the mouth to the butt, you know? but like, you know, and what they do and what they're responsible for and how they help basically like, you know, contribute to life.
Mm-hmm.
So much discussion on all that stuff.
Each body system has its, you know, very, very clearly defined role. And then some of them have, you know, multiple roles, right? Like we were talking offline earlier about the kidneys playing the renal system playing a huge role in your blood pressure.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. And let's say if you have unmedicated or undiagnosed hypertension, right, high blood pressure, that can lead to renal failure. Mm-hmm. And so when you have compromised kidneys, you can also have other blood pressure issues, right? Maybe now your blood pressure's too low because you're in renal failure, or it's all sorts of different things as far as health conditions. How right. If one system is out of whack, you're gonna get a. You're going to get a response somewhere else.
Yeah.
And it may not be a positive one for the long term.
A great example, one that I think we're very familiar with, and I'm sure you know the pathophysiology a lot more, but I can see the end result and the mm-hmm. practical aspect of dehydration. Like we see that a lot in classes out in the right. heat. You know, that process is pathophysiology in play. Like
right.
your body is not does not have enough fluid and water in it. That is affecting your electrolyte levels in your body, the electrical signaling between cells. And this, like, taking this class has helped me understand this a lot better in terms of why all of that is happening.
And one of the systems that dehydration affects is the cardiovascular system.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. And it's and you start compensating for a lack of proper hydration. Like I've been in those situations where I'm like, why am I breathing so heavy? Because right. I'm trying to perfuse better based off of the fact that my body's not functioning very well from the lack of hydration in it. So like all of that is working. Like your heart rate's going to increase, your mm-hmm. your breathing level or your breathing rate's increasing because all of those things need to be in balance for the level of activity that right. you're trying to sustain.
Not being able to regulate your body temperature as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Heat stroke. That stuff's like, yeah. And that, man, I hate myself for not, like, I'm going to call it the skin system. There's a term for it. I cannot remember it off the top of my head. Contigmentary. Fludigerary. I don't know. What is the skin system called? But like that is the one where a lot of people don't necessarily think about like what that's like. That is a system into itself, right?
Right, and your skin is has the largest surface area as far as an organ's concerned.
Mm-hmm. And it's such a vital role in your life. Like it is protecting your entire body from everything, the entire right. world. Like it is the last line of defense between all of the squishy stuff on the inside and everything else. So skin, super important. Yeah. We did a full on walkthrough of the, like all the different systems. Would you say that that's similar to when you went through Jonathan? Like, I know it was only 15 years ago, but like, was there as much emphasis on pathophysiology when you did it?
I would say no. You know, there was a very rudimentary like anatomy and physiology, but like really, really understanding the why behind each body system. Now, when I went through paramedic school, that was different, right? We really dove into understanding pathophysiology better, but even still, it's probably one of the areas that I think that because there's so much to learn. As you guys are discovering, there's so much to learn and so much to cover. It's still, it's one of the areas that I would say that I, again, still need to strengthen myself on, because it's really having a good foundation and understanding the pathophysiology of things is going to really set you up for success in determining what's going on with somebody. Mm-hmm. When you see something, you're going to be able to be like, okay, this is probably what this is. So, but it was not emphasized like at all. Really. I'm telling you, EMT school is way different. For the better.
Yeah.
For the better. Than when I came through, it was EMT school then was very like, I see this, I do this.
Mm-hmm.
And trauma medicine still kind of like that. But even in trauma medicine, we talk about the why are we doing things.
There seems to be less nuance mm-hmm. to the trauma side, right? Like there's only, I might be talking out of my butt here, but like there's only so many ways to assess like, hey, that's a arterial bleed. Like right. I see that it's an arterial bleed and there's a really good way to fix that. So, hey, I see that. I'm going to put a tourniquet on, you know?
Right.
Or I see a hole, like a gaping chest wound or something like that. I know immediate answer is put a occlusive dressing on. You know, like those, right. those types of like, if A happens, it's B. The right. medicine side, the disease side, the
right.
where you're starting to see like, well, I don't get like a really easy like clue as to what's wrong with this patient. Like, I don't see trauma. So mm-hmm. now I need to try and help figure out how to make this patient, you know, stable.
And
I don't have many clues to go by other than the assessment and vital signs.
And that's kind of the thing. It's like, okay, so we, you know, we're talking about it, pathophysiology. We're trying to really dive into, you know, understanding how the different body systems work together. But then when we actually do have an issue come up, part of that assessment is going to be getting the history. What led us up to this point? We've got to understand the history and the context of the situation, right? Pre-existing conditions. Okay, that's going to tell us a whole lot. Oh, somebody has diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Why are they exhibiting the symptoms they are exhibiting? Well, they have diabetes, and we know that that's an endocrine system disorder. And so, you know, what happens with that, right? That's why they're presenting the way they are. I had a lady the other week presenting with stroke-like symptoms, and that's a very generalized term, right?
Sure, yeah.
Stroke-like right. symptoms does not necessarily mean that they have had a stroke, and
stroke-like symptoms being
stroke-like symptom being facial numbness, drooping of the face,
slurred speech,
mental status, slurred okay. speech, weakness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, very quickly, we can do some things to make that determination, but I have to understand the pathophysiology of that endocrine system disorder.
Yeah,
to be able to understand that when I get that history, oh, they have diabetes. Oh, okay, I need to check their blood sugar. Oh, you have a blood sugar of 38. That's why. That's why you're acting this way.
So that altered Mendred status could probably be that.
That's exactly what it was, because it's like, you know, it's a big stroke mimicker.
Mm-hmm.
So, but without having that foundational understanding, you know, you don't know where to look.
Yeah, it's so important, and I think we're really starting to grasp that, and the. Not just the, like you said, like the, I think this is a big, it challenges one of my preconceptions going into EMT school, where I thought mm-hmm. there was going to be a very prescriptive, like if A happens, do B, right? And this challenges that misconception that I had going in, where there is a lot of, not leeway, the opportunity for you to help a patient by being, you know, observant and understanding how all these things are working to help them get the care that they need.
It's investigative work.
Yeah.
I think that's why I have been drawn to, you know, very, very early on, especially as a BLS provider, drawn to trauma medicine. And this is how it usually goes for folks. They're very drawn to trauma medicine. It's exciting. There's an adrenaline aspect to it. And it is that I see A, I do B. Mm-hmm. I see this, I do that. When we start to talk about medical calls and those sorts of things, you got to put your detective hat on. And you've really, really got to ask the questions and examine the circumstances and, you know, ultimately, a lot of the times it's your best guess. You're making a hypothesis based on what you see and your previous training.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, you got to put that investigator's hat on and really, really start asking the questions and looking at all the different signs and symptoms. And that could be even like looking around. It's like, okay, all right. What do I see when I walk into the scene? I see a syringe and a needle laid on the ground, and this person's not responding and they're not breathing. And, you know, well, what could this be? Okay. It could. Then I notice, oh, they've got constricted pupils. This might be a drug overdose.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway,
yeah, like you're taking external factors into account, mm-hmm. too, that aren't just
right.
The quote unquote vital signs. You're piecing it all together to help give good decisions, mm-hmm. like in the moment. It's super, like, I think this is the probably the more fun aspect of kind of the EMT, the EMS world is like, hey, you know what? We can start solving some questions that that we get presented with. Now one of my other takeaways from this week is it did seem like there were some common themes in terms of like what the body is doing. So we talked about compensation, decompensation, mm-hmm. how all those organ systems are working together. But the topic that came up a lot and one that we've talked about a ton, especially in like when we have discussions about like trauma medicine or like, you know, the Marshall side of things, like is shock,
sure.
right? Like how does shock come into play when it comes to pathophysiology? Cause there's like a bunch of different types, right?
Yes. So let me get to my notes on here.
Yeah.
I want to make sure I hit all these things.
Yeah. Cause there's, I mean, that was the other thing. I'm like, hey, you know, like it used to be, like when I've gone through like 2-day trauma training classes, it's like, there's only so much you can go through. Right.
Sure.
And, it always ends with treat for shock. And like, you're this right. was the first time where I've gone through classes where it's like, oh, that's the simple version. There's a bunch of different kinds.
There's ways to treat for shock.
And there's different ways to treat for. I'm like, oh no, I don't want options. I just want simple answers.
Yeah. There's no simple answers or free lunches in this.
Yeah. So hypovolemic was probably the one that I was most familiar with in terms of like,
right.
like hypo meaning less, volemic meaning volume.
Right.
Referring to blood loss. So that was one of the ones where it was like, hey,
well,
you know,
and in hypovolemic, right. We were talking about dehydration earlier, right. We could just have a fluid volume issue
mm-hmm.
In relation to dehydration, as well as hemorrhagic shock, which relates to blood loss.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, I mean, even within hypovolemic shock, we've got a breakdown of what is causing our volume issue. Right. That's ultimately what we need to think about is we have a volume issue with fluid. We don't have enough of it.
Right.
And so that's one of the things that we need to look at. Right. And ultimately, when we start talking about all the different types of shock, it goes back to what you talked about at the beginning of the episode with the body trying to maintain homeostasis and trying to perfuse all of its vital tissues with circulating that oxygenated blood around the body.
Yeah.
And so we start getting into the different categories of shock, something has started to happen. So hypovolemic, we have a volume issue. We don't have enough fluid for whatever reason to pump around the body.
Yep.
We start getting into cardiogenic shock. Okay. Now we're looking at a pump problem. Our mm-hmm. heart is not working the way it needs to.
Sure.
To get the volume, that oxygenated blood to the different parts.
And that would be like MIs, right? Myocardial infarctions. Is that the heart, the quote unquote heart attack is like a form of cardiogenic shock, right?
It can,
the heart itself isn't functioning.
Yes. Yeah. It is an issue with the pump. Now, that could be an electrical issue that's causing the pump not to correctly function.
Cause apparently the heart is, electrical and,
it generates its own electrical signals.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is super cool, but you know, it's like, We're basically got electric eels like powering your body.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like I said, it is a mechanical, electrical, chemical reaction always going on somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have distributive shock. Our distributive shock is going to be more related to getting all of the different things where they need to go body system wise. So, and how that different conditions can disrupt that.
Mm-hmm.
Sepsis, right? Some sort of systemic infection is gonna play into the body processes not being able to function properly. Anaphylaxis is also a form of distributive shock. So that is some sort of something that you have a hypersensitivity to, an allergy to, is interacting with body systems at that point, right? And so when we get an anaphylaxis, we get two or more body systems that are affected by that allergen.
Right.
Or that substance. So that also does not allow us to our bodies to function. So it's disrupting things. Neurogenic shock is also a subsection of distributive shock. It's kind of like the fifth shock
that coming this summer.
That doesn't get necessarily mentioned by itself, but that's when we have some sort of central nervous system or spinal cord injury, and we start getting low blood pressure, we start getting a lowered respiratory rate, and really because of some sort of mechanical damage, we're not able to, our body's not able to function and send signals where it needs to, mm-hmm. where they need to be sent.
And apparently that's important. Like,
it is. Yes.
Yeah. So, again, that whole central nervous system, how it ties everything together apparently is like a big deal. Like the brain and the spinal cord and the nerves and stuff. Apparently they're a bit of a prima donna when it comes to the body itself. Like they need to be involved with everything for some reason.
Right.
Like they are in everybody's stuff. Like,
excuse me. But yeah, so you've got obstructive shock as well. And so something is causing an issue and not allowing the different parts of the body, right? So when we talk about cardiac tamponade, that means we got like fluid
mm-hmm.
building up. And not allowing the heart to, so it's not necessarily that the pump, so there's something wrong with the pump. It's that
something's restricting the pump.
Something is restricting the pump. Yeah. And the same thing with tension pneumothorax, right? We've got air building up
and it's putting pressure on the lungs and it's pushing the heart. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the trachea.
It is obstructing the normal function of the body.
Right.
Yeah. So.
So like the shock stuff was, super interesting. It's like, oh, there's all these different kind of pathophysiologies of that shock, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, the thing that I also kind of blew my mind is like, oh, and by the way, it's all the same. Like, it's not all the same thing, but it's all a term for one particular concept, which we talked about before, and that's perfusion.
Right.
Like, and I had no, I was like, oh, shock is lack of perfusion in different ways.
And yeah. And so when we've talked about these types of shock, they all play into the fact that the body is not perfusing the tissue.
Right. It's not like blood isn't getting where it needs to go.
Mm-hmm. Like oxygenated blood isn't getting where it needs to
go. Thank you. Yes. Or things aren't being taken away from that area that need to be like taken away.
Right.
Like, you know, carbon dioxide is not being removed from the blood enough. Like all that can lead to lack of like, you know, things not perfusing well enough. So like it's all there. It's all that same process, but they could have different, they have different causes. So that means that they have different solutions. But at the end of the day, they're all signifying like a lack of perfusion, which is the functioning of that whole heart and lung machine, like pumping blood around the body.
Right.
Air goes in and out, blood goes round and round.
Yeah. And you know, as you start to get through class, you and Max go through class, you know, this is why the emphasis on, depending on what's going on, the emphasis is going to be on airway breathing circulation, right? Now, if we have a traumatic injury or something like that, we may flip those letters and go circulation, airway breathing.
Sure, yeah.
But that's why there's such an emphasis on airway breathing circulations is because we have to have that oxygenated blood circulating through the body.
Now, we haven't gotten there yet in class, because we're still in these things, but like, how does the, like, so all this comes through assessments, vital signs and all that stuff. And just real quickly, like we're talking about these kind of deep pathological or pathophysiology concepts. How often are you looking to see changes in that? Like how often are vital signs being taken? Like what is the methodology in the field of like how you're trying to figure those things out.
Yeah. So, I mean, it, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the from the door assessment, right? What do you hear?
The second you get there,
what are you noticing? And that could be all of your senses, right? That could be, what do you hear? What do you see? What do you smell? Which can all lead you down a path of like what's going on. So it starts with that. It starts with just being able to observe your environment, right? You guys have probably already talked about safely responding.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
EMS provider safety.
Provider safety, you know, right?
Who's most important on the scene?
I am. Actually. You're next. But I am. Yeah.
I mean, we joke around, but like that is like it's the whole like, hey, make sure that your oxygen mask is on before you put on someone else's.
Very, very much.
Because so, without you doing that, you're not there to help. Like you're going to die if you don't save yourself first, you know?
Right.
Make sure you're looking forward to be able to help other people.
But you know, to kind of get into your question, Mike, you know, so that from the door assessment is kind of where it starts. And maybe even a little bit before with dispatch information, but like truly once you're on scene, it's that from the door assessment. And then really, what do I see? You know, just looking at a person, I can tell, are they sick or not sick? And maybe this is a question you guys are going to get into, but I like to ask all of my students following a call where we've just cleared up at the hospital. All right. Was this patient sick or were they not sick? And could you tell if they were sick or not sick from the door?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the times they can. A lot of times you can look at somebody. I bet, you know, if we could see Max right now, we could be like, ah, he's sick.
Oh, he's sick. I was able to tell he was sick from a phone call. Like,
right. And that's a little tongue in cheek, right? But like when somebody's really sick, like down this path of the body's compensating, we can start to tell, right? Are they diaphoretic and sweaty? Are they pale, cool, clammy? You know, just those skin changes are going to be able to tell us something. Just their demeanor going to be able to tell us something. And as far as vital signs are concerned, that's once we start looking specifically at vital signs, you should be doing vital signs on every single patient that you get.
Yeah.
I mean,
early and often, I get like early voting
and often. Yeah. So, that there's a breakdown of that. And when you guys get specifically into assessments, we'll talk more about it.
Yeah.
But in general, critical patients, which you will be able to tell, they should at least get vital signs every 5 minutes. And then non-critical patients every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So, but what does that tell you? That even if they're not a critical patient, that we're doing vital signs often.
Yeah. And I'm sure that also changes too. Like if you notice, like, cause your eyes, mm-hmm. your ears, your nose, like those are your primary vital sign indicators, right? Like mm-hmm. if I see a patient that's like, hey, it's only been a minute since the last time I took a heart, a heart rate. But like, yeah. if it's all of a sudden they're like, they don't look so good.
Right.
You're not going to wait 4 minutes to do the next one. Right. Like right. you're assessing that stuff as you go along, I assume. Right. And then,
yeah.
And making that like, let me check it, again, you know?
And if something stands out, you're going to assess it more frequently.
Yeah.
Right. If a blood pressure is too high or too low,
you're going to keep a closer eye on it.
I'm going to keep a closer eye on it. Or if I've done an intervention, I'm going to go ahead and do a reevaluation of the particular thing that vital sign may indicate. But, ultimately, yeah, I'm looking at vital signs, and those are kind of, and in conjunction with that from the door assessment and in conjunction with that, like bigger, kind of look at history in the context of why were we called to the scene? I'm able to kind of draw on, okay, well, what kind of shock might this person be in if they're in mm-hmm. a state of shock, right? What body system is compensating for them? And I may be able to, make a determination as to that.
Yeah.
And maybe we haven't reached a point of that compensation yet for whatever condition it is that we were called for. So that might not be as readily apparent, yeah. but for people who are really sick, we're going down the path of if they're in a shock state, what shock state are they in, mm-hmm. and what type of shock is this?
I do have a question for you, because like with all okay. of the constant assessment and the methodology and understanding the pathophysiology and like all this stuff going through your head and like seeing things in the real world, what like it's invaluable to kind of get a sense of like what really happens, like mm-hmm. how fast do things go bad? Like, do you usually get like a warning sign to it? Or is it sometimes just like patients just nosedive? Is it all of the above?
I'm going to say this a lot. It depends.
Okay. Well, yeah, I love that. That's my favorite response in pretty much all of education. Yeah,
it depends. So, a lot of people, they wait to call 911.
Sure.
So they wait till the absolute last moment. And I get it. A lot of people, they don't want to go to the hospital. They don't want to. They were taught that 911 is it for emergencies, true emergencies, and they hold true to that.
Yes.
And they wait till it's an emergency to call.
Yeah.
And then some people call at the drop of the hat. They have a sniffle, and I wonder if Max is calling 911 right now.
Yeah.
but
I don't think I can make it to class tomorrow. Excuse me. It's an emergency.
but sometimes people will call, early on, and it will just be that start of that process. And they won't be as far down the path of being in some sort of compensated shock mm-hmm. state. They'll just be sick.
Sure.
Right. They've got, yeah. or whatever's going on with them. Excuse me. I might've caught what Max has.
Oh no. All right. No. So I'm assessing the situation. I think you are in shock. It's cardiogen. No, I don't know.
but ultimately, it does depend on the individual person. Some people are going to exhibit like clear signs. And if you're paying attention, you're going to see them start to crash.
Yeah.
Some people, they're so far down that rabbit hole and they're already so sick, it is going to be all of a sudden.
Okay.
I've seen permutations of all of the above. Right. There are people that like they're fine 1 second and then they're just out.
Yeah.
The ultimate goal though is that we can notice something about them.
Yeah.
And once we're able to notice something, maybe we can start to trend them the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
We can start to do something for them to get them a little bit more stable until we can get them to definitive care.
Or to slow down that.
It's just, right. Yeah, until we get. Yes. 100%.
Well, I do have one other question for you related to this, sure. Because one of the things that we heard several times in the class, it makes sense to me, but I just, you know, wondering what your experience has been. They had mentioned that children often respond differently than adults do when it comes to like compensating versus decompensating, where like adults, will like, they have a bit more of a gradual, like, you know, slide, if you will, to decompensation, yeah. Where it's like, hey, this is kind of seems to be going bad. This seems to be getting worse. This seems to be getting worse. And you can see the ramp down basically or ramp up to decompensation. Whereas sure. Like children like compensate really well until they don't. And then it's bad.
Yeah. So if we maybe I can use the whiteboard back here.
Oh, sure. Yeah. If you want to draw, yeah. I'll describe what you're drawing because
I'm not sure if they'll see.
All no, right. Not everybody will see it, but we could talk through it.
So if we look at a graph, right, we've got the x-axis and the y-axis on the graph.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, our adults are going to gradually, like you said, trend downward.
Right. Like status is the up and down, and then time is the right. Is the x-axis. Okay.
Right. So that's our adults. They're gonna trend that way.
Kind of like a 45-degree angle from the top left to the bottom right.
Yeah. And this is a generalization.
Yes,
Each patient's gonna be
because you're just different. Representing rate over time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Kids, on the other hand, it may be something like, okay, they have an issue and then they're gonna balance out. And compensate and compensate and compensate, and then they're gonna fall off a cliff.
Oh yeah, okay. They get bad real quick.
Well, they're gonna seem okay for a little bit, mm-hmm. but then once they go bad, it's you are fighting a very very difficult battle to keep them going.
Yeah.
And so the thing with kids is not to play around. As far as like you notice something, you need to go ahead and assess it and. Take it seriously.
It's kind of like your student tip in the last episode of like, if you notice something now's the time to like, yes. Like you were talking about more in terms of like, if you need to take care of something for yourself, now's the time to do it. It's kind of the same idea of like, if you notice something with that kid, now's the time to take care of it. Cause you may not have time later
And especially when we talk about respiratory emergencies with children, that's going to be you've got to take care of those immediately. Most of their issues do revolve around sort of respiratory issues or respiratory problems. And so you need to address them really, really quickly. And then sometimes, we won't get too far into it, but if they have an airway that is irritated and we have concerns over an epiglottitis or something like that, then we need to keep those kids calm, mm-hmm. and knowing when not to like mess with them.
Sure, yeah.
Is the big thing. But yeah, so I mean like we talk about the difference between adults and children compensating. It's that the adults are going to and I don't have a perfect timeline, but it's going to be more gradual. But if you're going to notice it.
Yeah.
With the kids, you may not as readily notice it. But once they go, they're going to go right off that cliff.
Yeah.
And so you've got to take it seriously.
I get that. I think next week in our next episode, we're probably going to dance around this topic some more in terms of like what the differences are between adults and children. Because I think mm-hmm. our next topic is lifespan development. And also a review of like everything that we've done so far in the next class. Sure. So I think lifespan development is about, you know, different ages and how they, I'm not 100% sure. I already have enough trouble keeping up with like the topics that we're currently doing. I haven't been looking ahead too much, but I do think that that's part of the discussion next week. But yeah, I think those are the things that it's like, what does this look like in the real world? Like we can talk about the book learnings all day, you know, the theory, the scientific side of it. And like, I think that's the fun part, the part that I'm looking forward to the most of this journey of this schooling is that at some point, we'll also get to pair that with the real world stuff and the clinical hours and the patient contacts and, you know, get to start learning it from the on the job type training. I think that's, I wouldn't say more valuable, but I think that's a truly great, you know, way to learn. Like it can't all just be in the book. You got to see
a hands-on field. Yeah. This is a very hands-on field. You're going to get out there. You're going to get in the mix of things. And I think that's probably the appeal to a lot of people when they get involved in this is how they are able to, you know, relate, to getting their hands dirty.
Yeah.
So
I think we've chatted about this a bunch, the idea of all these things working together. Obviously we kind of ended it here with like how that looks in the field and like what we're doing, but there's going to be so much more of that. And like pathophysiology, anatomy, all the things that we learned in the last episode, this episode, those are going to be things that are constantly referred to throughout the entirety of the journey. Right. Lots of opportunity there. I'm sure I'm really hoping that like towards the end of this podcast, I can look back here and be like, Mike, you are so like not familiar enough with like you said that the kidneys were part of the endocrine system or what, like, you know, like just picking myself apart and be like, you are so naive. Like, but that's fun to look back and go, oh man, I've come a long way.
And here's something to keep in mind, I mean, even for myself, like this learning is iterative.
Yes.
Right. Yep. Like it's all building upon a greater body of knowledge. And I mean, even from participating in the podcast, like I'm like, okay, well, I got to make sure I'm on top of my stuff before I start saying it's.
Yeah. So. I get the privilege of being the naive one. So, but yeah, so, that's kind of like the run through of everything we chatted about, or maybe not everything, but the major concepts and what we chatted through in pathophysiology. And like I said, we'll dance around that stuff a lot over the course of the podcast. But, next week, like I mentioned, we're getting into, the lifespan of lifespan development. So stay tuned for that. And then what we like to wrap up with is our regular segments of tools of the trade and Jonathan's student tip of the week. I think we're going to skip Max's tool of the trade this week. I don't want to steal another one from him. We did tourniquets in the last episode, which I'm sure he'll be really bummed that he didn't get to be here for. And we were going to do EMT shears, but I will save that for Max.
Yeah, he'll enjoy that.
He'll enjoy it because he's going to have me like, oh, there's so many different types of shears. Blah, 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 these shears are the best. So I'll save that for him. But just know that we will be back to the tools of the trade in the next episode. But with that, we'll kind of wrap things up with Jonathan's student tip for this week.
Sure. So I have put the word out that I'm participating in this podcast to some of my peers in the field. And this tip actually comes from one of my peers who is an EMT instructor.
Ooh.
This tip is from EMT instructor Ashley. And she says one of the things that she likes to see from students is that they are not afraid to ask questions. Now, that being said, You know, everybody's afraid of kind of looking dumb by asking a question sometimes. But truly, in especially at this level of training, be ready to ask those questions, because everybody else in the class may still have the same question you have. They just might not want to ask.
Yeah.
So during this process, don't be afraid to look foolish. Right. I promise you, you're not. I would much rather answer your question as she would as well. And get you the answer that that you might need as you go forth into training. So don't be afraid to ask those questions, even if you think they might be a little silly. Yeah. I promise they're not.
I'll even add to that too, from the student perspective. Make sure you support your fellow students when they have when they do have questions, even if it is something that sounds silly. There is an aspect of learning where there is a huge amount of bravery needed sometimes in certain class mm-hmm. environments for someone just to even broach the subject, to basically be the sacrificial lamb or the one to break that first wall down so that everyone else feels comfortable to be able to start the conversation. And that is sometimes so integral and important to the learning process, just breaking the ice for other people to feel comfortable to start the conversation. So support them. That's important. And sometimes students, you know, need the encouragement to go, like, basically don't shame anybody for asking questions. Like, that should never be part of the student environment. You know, make sure that everyone's getting the most out of the experience that they can, and, you know, encourage people to talk. Like, I think that's really important. It shouldn't just be one of those things where you just sit there and, like, everyone just absorbs. Like, you know, everyone's gonna, like, learn a lot better when there's some chat, when there's some level of discussion.
100%. And that's great. I mean, and you've got to, as a class, like, you build a bond with the people in these classes. Mm-hmm. 100%. Like, I can think about all the people I've done any of my EMS training with, and they stick in my mind as special people to me. Maybe sometimes they were a little frustrating to work with, but even then, if I see them out, I try and speak to them. So yeah, definitely support each other as classmates. But, you know, as Mike said, don't be afraid to ask that question.
Love it. So. Well, thank you. Please give our thanks from the Ride Along EMT podcast to EMT instructor Ashley.
Yeah.
You know, we appreciate the advice, and let her know she can pass some our way any day, because we need all the advice we can get to get through school. The support that we've gotten from people along the way, the goodwill, people being like, that's awesome. You know, get out there, get into EMT training. That's what drives. I don't want to speak for Max, but I know it's what drives us and has been a huge, huge, like, solace in this process. 'Cause it's a lot of work, but people, like, being encouraging about it has been great. So, with that, I think we'll wrap things up on pathophysiology, and stay tuned for next week, where we will go into lifespan development, and we'll have tons more to talk about. So,
all right.
Thanks for taking the ride with us. We'll see you next time on the Ride Along.
See you guys.
This podcast is for educational and storytelling purposes only. It is not medical advice or official EMT training. Always follow your accredited instructors and local protocols. Heartbeats racing it all.